Welcome back, Boils and Ghouls, to Handle with Scare, a horror podcast brought to you by Totally Drunk and Vashti. Be sure to stay connected with us via social media on Twitter at Handle with Scare. You can email the show at handlewithscarepod@gmail.com and find more information about us on our website at www.handlewithscarepod.com. So let me introduce you really quick to my co-host. She puts the hot in psychotic. It's Vashti. Vash, you know, I know it's been a pretty busy day. It's Memorial Day. You've been busy doing some of the Chattanooga Film Festival, which I've been doing practically all weekend. Yeah. So a lot of you in regards to that, which I know we're going to deep dive into here in just a little bit. But how has this past week been treating you?
This week has been good. Work was good. Into the weekend, nice. The weather has been really good. Was able to barbecue over the weekend and everything like that. And of course, Memorial Day, you know, we're celebrating a holiday where we're thankful for all of our freedoms that we have in our country because of all of those vets who've given their lives, men and women, you know, so that we can have the freedoms that we do have. So, yeah. Just hanging out and loving that and watching horror movies.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of that over the weekend. A lot of stuff that, you know, we were kind of antsy about seeing, despite the fact that some of the titles would be going to Shudder in, you know, anywhere between a month to like 3 months. But you know what? With the CFF online this year definitely gave us an opportunity to check out quite a bit. But before we jump into that, let's quickly take a look at what is happening in regards to horror news for the rundown. So we got two new TV series, one of which is being renewed. One, Getting Green Lit by CBS. So up first, we have FX, who, you know, recently found a pretty big hit in their hands in regards to the What We Do in the Shadows TV series, which has, honestly, like, they've really grown that audience. It's seen an uptick ever since its first season that debuted in 2019. So FX has gone out and they've renewed What We Do in the Shadows for a third season. And
I'm so happy.
I am ecstatic about this. And, you know, I have to say, like, every time we hear about a movie-turned-TV series, I was getting a little nervous that, you know, it's not going to have the same type of appeal or it's not going to find an audience. But that has not been a case for What We Do in the Shadows because they have seen a 25% viewership increase in regards to Season 2 over Season 1. Now, those that haven't seen the movie, it is based off of a film that was released in 2014, which is kind of like a mockumentary, I think is the best way to put it, in regards to vampires and them essentially like just trying to live together in the same house and get in kind of like brought into society. But I have to say, like, this season I've really been enjoying. I've been trying to keep up as best as I can. I don't know if I'm 100% current, but I did make sure that I checked out the recent cameo appearance for Mark Hamill, because he did play one of the elder vampires here in a recent episode. But, you know, I know both of us are really big fans of this series, and, you know, I have to say, like, it's very refreshing hearing something getting renewed as opposed to the amount of cancellations that we have seen.
And I am very ecstatic about that. I'm so happy. I love the movie when it came out. I love the show. I love the show so much that I have gone back and watched the first season twice and everything. And actually, I'll put it on. And hubby will be like when we're having dinner or something like that. And he hasn't really watched many episodes of the show. I've had him watch one or two. So I'll start off at like, you know, where he left off. You know, he watched the first two episodes of the first season. Now, like, I'll have him watching episode 3 and 4 and stuff like that. And I've watched them 2 or 3 times, but yet I still love this show. It's so amazing. The writing, the directing, the cameos, the acting. It's just so much fun to watch. They're amazing. They're all great.
Yes, definitely. If you guys have not checked it out, you can check out What We Do in the Shadows. The first couple of seasons are available on Hulu on their streaming service. So definitely give that a shot if you haven't already. I promise you it is a very good time and plenty of laughter. And plus, like, they really, like, dive into different, like, vampire tropes in regards to, like, the different subgenres within the genre itself.
Also vampire hunters. Mm-hmm. And vampire council and stuff like that. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and you know, you can sprinkle in some werewolves, some trolls recently. Mm-hmm.
Some Babadooks.
That is also true. I forgot.
Yeah, a couple episodes ago. Yes. Well, I think it was the end of. No, it was the episode about ghosts. Mm-hmm. Where Guillermo's like, wait, you don't believe in ghosts? You're a vampire. Just watch the episodes. They're great. We'll leave that at that. I don't want to give any more information away.
Absolutely.
What else do we have?
So next up, we have a new series coming to CBS as they have greenlit a Silence of the Lambs TV series, which they have called Clarice, which will be coming... They didn't necessarily, like, put a season on it. I would imagine it would probably be the fall season, maybe winter. But they just said, you know, 2020, 2021 season. That kind of narrows it down, but not really. But whatever. Besides the point. So, obviously, Silence of the Lambs, when it comes to, like, genre pieces, very important. One of the few horror movies that really... took, like, a lot of Oscars home. They took 5 Oscars home in 1992. Really kind of, like, breathed new life into the thriller genre soon after that. And we don't have, like, too many details so far. We do know that Rebecca Breeds, who starred in Pretty Little Liars, will be playing the role of FBI agent Clary Starlin. And the series is reportedly set in 1993, 6 months after the events of The Silence of the Lambs, and it will focus on Starlin's work in Washington, D.C. Now, this is actually, like, the second series that we're gonna get from... Essentially, like, this property. I know NBC was home to the Hannibal TV series. That one was on the air for 3 seasons before it got canceled in June of 2015, which at the time was honestly a pretty big surprise when you factor in the critical acclaim that Hannibal had. But unfortunately, it did see... viewership decline season to season, and NBC decided to pull the plug on that. So, you know, I will say, when I first heard about this, that was my initial thought. I was like, oh, crap, like, I really hope that this isn't going to basically have the same lifespan or see another quick cancellation. But, you know, it goes without saying, like, how much of... a resurgence that we saw from the genre due to Silence of the Lambs and, you know, the acclaim that it got. So I don't know if I'm going to be fully on board with it right out of the gate, just because I don't want to see a situation arise where all of those fans that were burnt by Hannibal being canceled, I'm a little worried that maybe they won't embrace this particular series in the same way.
True. It can happen, but... we shall see. We'll just give it a chance, though. With everything that's going on and everything like that, we need a new series to watch. And I think they'll do it well if it's starting right after, you know, where the movie ended. Well, 6 months after where the movie ended and everything. I think that's a good place to put it instead of bringing it present day.
Right on. And so, it's yeah. Going to be interesting, too, because you figure... with this type of series, it's probably going to fall more in line with, like, the crime drama genre. So, like, that's pretty crowded. So it really needs to find its niche within that genre to really stand out. Because that's a pretty crowded...
yeah, to be able to stand alone. Yeah, to be able to stand alone. I get you.
All right, so let's talk about the big news this week. And obviously, we've both been... all over this. That is the Chattanooga Film Festival. We mentioned it on our last episode. This has been going on all weekend. Today is actually the last day. So this is day number 4. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you got your single day pass, which $10, which, I mean, honestly, like, I was looking on Prime. They did have Scare Package available to rent. It was actually one of the few that is available to rent. And the price point for that was $9.99. So there alone, you already got your money's worth out of the festival. But that's besides the point. So there's been a lot of genre titles involved with the CFF this year, and of course, you know, due to the pandemic, everything has been online. And, you know, I have to say, I really haven't had too many issues like accessing the site or getting it to work. You did have to use like Microsoft Edge or Safari as the browsers, so I wasn't able to watch like via Chrome or anything, but, you know, that wasn't that big of a deal. And I was not able to actually pull anything up on mobile, even if I was using, like, the desktop version of the site. But that wasn't, like, a huge deal to me. I mean, I wasn't assuming that it was going to work. But, you know, in those situations where I was at work and I wanted to watch something on break, I was not able to do that. But outside of that, things were actually running very smoothly across the board. And I checked out, like, quite a few titles. So I know there were probably, I want to say, like, four movies that I know both of us caught that we'll definitely be talking about. And there were a couple of ones that I know I've caught that you have not as of yet, which, you know, maybe you'll circle back to after the podcast. Maybe not, but, you know, it is what it is. But I want to talk, I want to talk about, you know, the titles that we have seen and then talk a little bit about them and do, like, a quick recap or, you know, review rather than, like, deep dive in fully. And doing, like, the body count and things like that, because I didn't write down all of that stuff. Obviously, I was just diving into and just seeing what the festival has to offer, and not note-taking, because I don't want to do that the first time I really watch something. That's more of a repeat viewing type of thing. So I'm not going to go in, like, the order in which I watched them, because that would be jumping around way too much. But I did watch Attack of the Demons, which is one of the animated features at this year's CFF. And this is a U.S. release from 2019 that was directed by Eric Power. Now, this is basically like a 90s animated flick revolving around a demonic cult that is essentially just trying to destroy mankind. It's kind of like set in like this really small town in, like, Colorado, and there's such a bunch of demons, as you expect with, you know, the title Attack of the Demons. And it's basically, like, three friends trying to come together to stave off the apocalypse, essentially. Now, what I dug about this one, Fosh, is it has, like, this paper-based animation. It did kind of remind me a little bit of, like, South Park and the way that that's made. You know, there's a lot of similarities. You know, it's also based in Colorado. You know, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time we've seen, you know, something quite like this in South Park either. But basically, this takes place in Barrington, Colorado, and we see, like, this influx of visitors coming to the town for their annual Halloween music festival. Needless to say, all hell decides to break loose as soon as there is this shadowy robed figure that begins to lurk around the town. Then all of a sudden, the demon plague overtakes the town, and it's up to that trio and their really weird uncle to kind of, like, take down the demon plague. Now, what I will say is, despite this being a demonic movie, I don't know if I would classify the creatures in this animation as demons. They were definitely more zombie-type, like, setup.
It was kind of like zombie alien-ish.
A little. So, like, that was kind of polarizing.
Well, because they looked, they were gooping with green and blue stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And then the way they looked, like, some of them looked kind of like aliens, but then the way they walked and the way they, you know, came, you know, approached you and their mannerisms were zombie-like and stuff like that. So that was weird, or not weird. It was different, but, and I was like, I wasn't expecting for it to be all like a cartoon. Like, I was like, oh, okay, the first part's animated, you know, or the first, I thought it was going to segue into something else, or possibly just the title sequence was animated. And I was like, oh, no, this is all animated. All right, this is different. Sweet, let's do this. So that was actually pretty neat. I actually like what Eric did. It was different, and I like that. It wasn't just like a regular horror movie. It was a nice animated one.
You know, I was trying to think of, like, what other, like, animation-type features that I could think of that it kind of reminded me of. I would imagine something like this does take a while. Maybe the only thing close to that maybe being, like, claymation-type setups, which also take a really long time to just piece together. But I thought it was interesting, like, at one point, you know, we do see, like, a separate head, and then it, like, it sprouts hands and legs and, like, just keeps wandering.
Like, yeah, that one. Yeah, that was weird. That was crazy. I was like, oh, no.
I was like, oh, it's not over quite yet. But all in all, like, for an animated flick, I didn't really know what to expect from this one kind of going in. And since it is animated, I will say, like, there wasn't a ton of gore even in anime form in that sense, but you know, it's kind of sprinkled in here and there, but it wasn't really that kind of movie. But I will say, like, out of the festival viewings, I did actually really enjoy this one. I had a hard time kind of ranking this one because while I really enjoyed the style, I didn't necessarily like some of the characters, especially the one girl's boyfriend. I think it was Chad? I don't know.
Chads are always jerks.
Who's the one that was playing in the band at the bar?
Oh, yeah. I forgot his name already. My bad. Yeah, he was not cool.
No, not at all. But I'd say I'd probably put anywhere between, I don't know, I would say 3 stars would probably be the sweet spot for me out of 4. Where'd you put this?
Same. Okay. I put it at 3. I liked how it was different. I liked, you know, it didn't need to be super gory for me. It was funny at times, and there was people in it who, you know, characters who annoyed me, like the stupid guy and stuff like that. I liked the music a lot in this movie. I actually watched this a little bit earlier today, probably around like 12 or 1 or something like that. And I was really loving and digging the music. So great job, whoever did the score and the music for the movie. Eric Power, if you did all of that too, that's great. That was awesome. I liked it. Absolutely. So a solid 3.
All right. So next up, we had a French feature. Which is definitely not like really anything that I have seen. So why don't we talk about the amusement park, Vosh?
All right. So this one is called Jumbo. It's a drama, like Totem Sun. It's directed by Zoe Wittek. It's a French film, and it is in subtitles. And it was done in 2020. And it pretty much... it's based on a true story, which I did not know that at first. The film follows Jean. I think it's Jean, right? Mm-hmm. A shy young woman who lives at home with her uninhibited mother and works as a cleaner at an amusement park. And she cleans the amusement park at nighttime. She doesn't really clean it during the day. She waits until everybody leaves. And then she goes in and cleans it. And then she cleans the rides and stuff like that. And during her late night shifts, she begins spending time with the alluring new Tilt-A-Whirl ride that she decides to call Jumbo. And she strikes an intimate bond with the ride. She talks to him when she's having her lunches. She sits with them. She ends up being seduced by his red lights and green lights, by the way, smooth chrome and oily hydraulic. As a result, she wants to pursue a thrilling new relationship with Jumbo. She's never had any relationships with any humans, but she has a connection to Jumbo. And Jumbo, to her, she feels that he knows her and he understands her. And and vice versa, she understands him. So they fall in love and everything. It's different. It's a very different movie. I was like, after I watched it, I was like, what the heck did Chotem just have me watch? By the way, you didn't have me watch it, but you did recommend it. You're like, I'm recommending this one. I'm going to watch it. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch it. I'll check it out. Yeah, you always have me watch crazy ass French films.
I mean, this is a different kind of French movie. Normally, when I'm recommended French movies to you, it's extreme French horror. That is not the case.
That is true. No, not in this case at all.
No, this is definitely a drama. A bit sad in spots, but like, really, this is a tale of a socially awkward loner who is forming this unique psychosexual attraction to basically glowing machinery, right? Like, so what's not to love about a girl meets theme park ride, falls in love with said ride, and then a mother tries to tear them apart because a mother just quite, like, can't understand her daughter at all. And, you know, it's very obvious in this mother-daughter relationship that the mom is constantly treating her daughter as a little kid. And I will say,
but it goes back and forth.
Yes.
Like, she treats her like a little kid, but then she shoves her boss and invites her boss over and tells her daughter that she needs to have sex with her boss.
Yeah, that was kind of like a weird moment, but like, really at its core.
Yeah. So she's, go ahead.
Like, Jumbo is filled with, like, these dazzling arrays of neon lightings when it comes to the ride, which does kind of, like, change based on, you know, kind of, like, the movements that the ride is experiencing. Jumbo does have a way to communicate with Gene, whether it's, like, you know, green means yes, red means no, you know, things like that. So they do have bit of a way to communicate. And I will say, like, shout out to Hubert for being the only person in this entire movie who is just willing to accept Gene for who she is as a person.
Right?
Everyone else is like, nah, this bitch is fucking weird. All these, like, teenagers are trying to, like, get her on film and having, like, this relationship. And, you know, there was a sequence in this movie where, you know, Gene is basically being covered in oil from Jumbo. So she, like, enters, like, this void sequence, essentially, that kind of reminded me of Under the Skin. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but, you know, it was one of those moments where you're like, okay, like, clearly something else is going on here. Like, it's very obvious what this is trying to symbolize. And I just remember, like, at one point in the movie, you know, like, the mom and her are getting into an argument, and, you know, Hubert gets brought into the discussion of, like, well, he at least makes me orgasm, you know, the mom in this case. and then Gene is just, like, trying to, like, explain herself because, like, her mom just can't understand. And then Gene's like, well, you know, Jumbo makes me orgasm too. And, well, there you go. That whole sequence was essentially just that. But, you know, it was just one of those things, like, the heartbreaking moment in this movie is, you know, after, you know, Gene basically hooks up with her manager, you know, the person operated the amusement park. You know, she ends up winning an award. And unfortunately, like, we sadly find out that they are selling the ride. And needless to say, Gene is not too happy about all of this and ends up fainting, drops her award, it shatters everywhere. And it just kind of, like, goes in there, and then it kind of, like, do a rush sequence involving, you know, the amusement park ride. And Gene, I don't want to, like, spoil what the ending of the movie is, but I will say, like, at its core, you know, one of the big messages for this movie is that, you know, these machines, you know, they feel too, like, they have souls. You know, they are living and breathing type thing. And, you know, this one really stood out to me just because it was so unique, and I really liked the neon lighting that they used throughout. So it was obviously, like, there was communication going on between both parties in this case. But, like, it was really weird, like, knowing that, you know, there were different things that they could have done to, like, showcase, like, that objectophilia side of this relationship. But they just decided not to do that altogether outside of her, at times, you know, maybe like caressing the ride or, you know, pushing her her breasts up against it when she's like topless, you know, things like that. But like it completely shied away from anything outside of that, which I thought was like fine for what the movie was. But across the board, I would say out of like the 7 or 8 films that I've seen so far, this one was one of the standouts. I put it at 3 stars, but it's definitely a heartbreaking film, especially towards the middle part there.
Exactly. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I had to switch headsets. Sorry about that, everyone and Totem. Yeah, so it is heartbreaking. And it like, that's what got to me. I was just like, and yes, shout out to Hubert, because he is the best. And that's what tied it, like, at the end, when he helped, you know, her mother finally see and come to her senses, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be have a good ending. Because I really did not want her to be committed. Mm-hmm. That would have not been great at all. I would not have been happy. But I did really like the movie.
Yeah, the one scene that really stood out in, like, that depressing moment was, you know, as Jean and, you know, her mom are fighting and Hubert is kind of, like, stuck in the middle here. You know, Hubert isn't really having it, and he's just about to go. And then the mom is, like, trying to stop him, and, you know, she says that, you know, she loves him, and he just turns around, and he's just like, you know, I'm not the one that you're supposed to be saying that to. And
yep.
Then he just storms off, and I was like, thank you! Like, drop
you're
the
like,
mic!
Like, thank you, it. Right there! Just drop it, Hubert, because that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, and she didn't get it. But yeah, it was a good movie and stuff like that. I did like it.
Yeah, so if you're,
thank you if for you're, suggesting.
If you're looking for a... I don't even know how to describe a depressing romance movie, definitely go check this one out when it is available on video on demand. I don't think it's available to rent as of yet, but keep your eyes peeled for that. Now, speaking of things that you can rent, because this one is available on VOD right now, it is also coming to Shudder here next month. Let's talk about Scare Package. This is a U.S. release from 2019, and this is one of the anthology films that was released, or just, you know, shown during CFF this year. So basically, mm-hmm. This is a blend of comedy, horror, each kind of like tale dives into a different subgenre, taking aim at the various tropes and cliches that populate horror as a whole. Now, we have 7 stories here, each one having different directors. You've got Tales included, Girls' Night Out of Body. We have The Night He Came Back Again, Part 4, The Final Kill. Cold yes. Open, One Time in the Woods, Mister, So Much to Do, Rad Shad's Horror Emporium, which had like a secondary title, I think, which was Horror Hypothesis. So basically, all of these stories are kind of like bridged together. There's like this back setting of the store owner, Chad, who is out hiring a new employee, Han, as like an assistant to help out with the videos at this video store, which is Rad Shad's Horror Emporium. They got a lot of stuff. And basically, the stories are told through like VHS tapes that he ends up finding. Now, I definitely want to talk about segment standouts for us, because I know for me, there were probably 2 that stood out more than the others. But I will preface this by saying that as a whole, my fears when it comes to anthology horror did come to fruition here, where I really only liked a couple, and there was a lot of just, like, they're okay. But it was a mixed bag for me. But the two segments that really stood out to me were The Night He Comes Back Again, which is the one that kind of pokes fun at horror killers never wanting to stay dead, where they're coming up with like different ways to try to get rid of the bad guy, and they have like a checklist, and nothing just seems to be working, right?
Oh my gosh, that one was funny.
And then
that one was good.
The other one was the last segment, which was Horror Hypothesis, which dealt with the whole rehabbing of this slasher, which had a very big cameo. And the killer was actually played by Dustin Rhodes in this one, which I didn't know about either. So seeing like a wrestler playing the role was cool to see as
well. Nice. Yeah, that's really cool.
But outside of that, I will say there was one segment in particular that was like, you know, like I appreciate what they're trying to do. And I did like the kind of like acidic take in regards to the special effects. That one being One Time in the Woods. But I had an issue with the writing in this one in particular, where there were things that were definitely a little bit too on the nose, and I felt like they didn't really need to go that direction. I remember one part, you know, the killer rips the guy's legs off, right? And he starts beating him with one. Then he, like, pulls off the other one. And then, you know, the guy that he's killing is just like, oh, I just signed up for a marathon. And I was like, oh, my God. Like,
I remember that. And then he's just like, he's like, I have a butterfly ankle tattoo. I'll never be able to appreciate it. I was like,
Yeah. So, like, moments like that were just ones that I just, like, kind of facepalmed. Now, I will say, like, as a whole, they did touch up on a lot of tropes throughout all of the segments. There were definitely a lot of callbacks, more particularly in Horror Hypothesis, which was the one that wrapped everything kind of like together there, especially when you were looking at like the map that was in this building. You know, you had like the Room 237, you had the VHS archives, and a couple of other things that were on there as well. But, you know, across the board, you know, like, it's really hard for me to be, like, putting this higher than, like, 2 stars, just because it was a mixed bag. You know, 2 would be right smack dab in the middle. I feel like the mileage for people for anthology series in particular is always going to be a wide range here. Now, I had 2 stories I really liked. One I didn't really care for at all, and a lot of them that were just kind of, like, they're not bad, but they weren't necessarily stand out to me. So I suck it at 2 stars in particular, but was there any like standout moments for you throughout the 7 stories here?
Mainly just the ones that you talked about, the one where the slasher villain, he never dies. He keeps coming back and they keep trying to figure out a different way. I did like the one which one was that one where it was the 2 mages fighting.
Okay.
That's the one where the 2 guys in the black hooded thingy, branded the guy on his head. Mm-hmm. And then he turns into like smoke. And then he gets sucked in. Well, he goes into a woman's body and then she beats herself up to get him out, and she didn't like spoilers. That one was kind of funny to me. That one made me giggle a little bit. The other ones I was like, eh, and stuff like that. Most of the stuff where what was it, Rad Chad, like in his store, all of the interactions there I actually liked and stuff like that. And how he's trying to break down when he gets captured, like who is who, like in what type, and he's trying to figure out what type of horror movie it is that they're stuck in right now and how to get them out of it. That was kind of funny, but there were just like bits and pieces for me. So I'd give it about 2.5.
Okay.
I also just finished watching the scare package, like right before we started, recording. I had just literally finished it, so I'll probably go back and watch it again, and maybe I missed some things or something, but 2.5.
All right, so next up, we actually had really like a movie that I had a really hard time deciding what subgenre this belongs in.
Go with gross and creepy and parasitic as fuck, because But yeah, let's get into The Beach House, shall we? It is directed by Jeffrey A. Brown. It's done in the U.S. And it was done in 2019. It's a romantic getaway. The plot is a romantic getaway for two troubled college sweethearts. It turns into a struggle for survival when unexpected guests and the surrounding environment exhibit signs of a mysterious infection. I hate these movies. Like, I love them, but I hate them because they make me queasy. And then I feel like I have to take a million showers. And then I have to wash everything because it's just so gross. So what I thought of the movie, it was really good. I like the way it ended. It does not end on a high note, you guys, with someone like, you know, okay, I escaped the infection. I'm going to be okay. No, you got to watch it. And I'm not going to give you the ending, but it does not end with a happy ending, I should say. It's basically, they go to the beach house, they start seeing signs of that there's nobody literally in the town, and they're wondering where are the people at and stuff like that, but they don't really think too much of it. Then there's all of this weirdness with the water and how it feels. And then at nighttime, you can see that there's this like certain type of algae or something in the ocean that the young man who brought his college sweetheart up there, his girlfriend, so they could rekindle their relationship and stuff like that and get back on track. He had never seen that before. So what's in the water and everything? What's going on? And something's infecting what's in the town. But what is it? And why is it happening? And can it be fit? We don't know. But you got to watch the movie. Anyway, Totem, what did you think?
I have to say, I really dug this one in particular. This one, I would say, I will preface, this is more of a slow burn independent movie. But basically, you have Randall, who is basically like going to this beach house that his dad owns. Little does he know that his dad had already offered it to some friends. Needless to say, like, you know, Randall, like, I don't even think he talked to his dad about going there. He just shows up and just assumes no one will be there. Besides the point.
Randall seems like the type of guy that's just like, oh, it's my family's. I'm just going to go up there and use it.
I mean, it's our property. It's no big deal. But anyway, so basically it starts out as a night, you know, just having dinner together. You know, a bunch of wine is getting drunk. The couples take edibles together. And then we turn into, like, this night where there's this weather oddity that is happening as this breeze basically blows off of the ocean. And then, like, this, as you mentioned, like, algae starts to, like, catch onto, like, the trees and, like, the surroundings. So, you sense, like, something is definitely in the water. And then the next morning, everyone in this household is getting sick. Emily, who is, like, the main girl in this one, seems to be the least, like, worst for wear out of the four of them. And she's basically sitting there watching as her boyfriend and the house guests start to, like, spiral out of control as they kind of, like, switch between this infection and then delving into, like, self-paranoia and things like that. And what's cool about this is, like, when they go outside, basically everything in the surroundings has seemingly disappeared. So they're basically cut off from really, like, any sort of hope of being rescued. They don't know what's happening. There's a ton of confusion. And the beach house kind of, like, takes this deep descent into, in spots, like, a grotesque body horror. But, you know, there's just so much uncertainty about, like, what is happening, why it's happening. But I did appreciate the fact that the main actress in here, Emily, is actually, like, a microbiologist. So I was like, you know, like, I like that it coincides with who her character actually is. So, like, even she is perplexed by this because that's unlike anything that she has seen before.
Yeah.
But What makes The Beach House so compelling is the fact that it's not tied down to any one subgenre. You know, you have notes of pandemic horror. You've got like a sci-fi invasion type feel to it. It touches on grotesque body horror. You know, you can think infection or zombie. There's cosmic elements kind of like sprinkled throughout all of this. And this one is going to be coming to Shudder at some point this summer. So this is another one that you guys will be able to check out here in the next couple of months, along with Scare Package. But I have to say, like, I don't want to spoil the ending, you know, just like you you mentioned.
Don't do it. Yeah, don't do it.
Definitely not an uplifting movie. But I promise you, guys, stick with this one. I know it might be a little slow for some people's liking, but this one was so damn intriguing. And, you know, if I was to score this one, I had it right at 3.5 out of 4.
Nice. I'm going to give it a 3. I liked it as well. It was very, it was very well written and very, and it was done really well. I'm giving it a 3 because mainly because I just, infectious movies and parasite movies always freak me out. There was this scene that I will tell you guys about before we move on that literally made me almost hurl. Was when Emily, it's after she's on the beach and she steps in what you think would be like a jellyfish, or you would think she stepped on a jellyfish or she stepped on maybe some seaweed or something like that. And she looks down and it's kind of like a goopy stuff that came from the ocean that I think is where the parasite, you know, possibly has, where it's formed, where it's began, like in the ocean, and then it comes out, it gets on land, blah, blah, blah. So she steps on it and this thing like just literally goes inside her foot. And the way it happens, I'm like, oh, that's so gross. And then she goes inside and then she takes a knife and she cuts her foot open. And then she takes these tongs and she pulls it out and it's just so gross. Oh, but it's really cool. It's gross, but it's cool. So yeah, check out the movie. It's really good. Totem gives it a 3.5. I give it a 3. So
yeah, you won't be
disappointed.
Watching that scene too, I definitely turned away too. Like that type of sequence, especially when it's like a parasitic thing where it's a pretty lengthy worm. I mean, let's be real here, that she's pulling out of her foot. I'm like, oh no, I can't.
No. Yeah, and I'm always at the beach, you know, when I can. I live 20 minutes away from it, you know, and driving distance. So I'm always there. So seeing stuff like this on the beach, like now when I go to the beach, that's what I'm going to think of.
Yeah,
it's going to freak me out.
just make sure you don't have any like Silent Hill fog rolling in.
Exactly.
Isolated, or, you know, be mindful of the wind or like weird algae forming and getting blown into the sand, you know, all that.
Totally.
But anyway. Yeah. So another one that I had caught is Coco di Coca Day, which is a Swedish horror flick directed by Johannes Nyholm, which was released in 2019. This is basically like another like couples retreat who are, you know, dealing with the loss of their daughter. And, you know, they decide to go on a trip to, you know, grieve, all of that good stuff, just, you know, need a distraction. And then they end up getting harassed by like this sideshow artist and like this very shady entourage, which is like a girl, like some like brute who's like kind of like reminds me of like an Igor type character. Like it's like one of those guys. And then there's like a dog, basically, that he carries around. This one I had a really hard time with. And I'll tell you why. For one, you know, I have no problem with grief being like a centerpiece for a horror movie. I will say in the past 2 years, I would say that has probably been a little bit outdone.
Yeah.
Especially when you talk about like some of the more heavy hitters like Hereditary or even Midsommar, because that's same director.
Oh, yeah.
But you basically have, you know, this couple who's dealing with this loss, and it takes, like, this weird thing where, like, it was kind of, like, polarizing. So, basically, they end up getting attacked on the first night by, like, this sideshow, like, carny artist and his lackeys. And, you know, you have the leader of this group who is, you know, very gleeful when it comes to his expressions throughout this attack. And then this movie takes, like, a turn as this whole attack sequence kind of, like, resets into, like, this Groundhog Day-styled scene where the attack just differs from the last one that we have seen.
Huh.
So only the man of this couple appears to remember what had happened in the time before this with the attack. His lover has no knowledge of anything, which only, like, heightens her, like, sense of paranoia, because, yeah, like, she has no idea what's going on. Like, her boyfriend is leaving her no explanation as to what is going on. All she sees is her boyfriend, like, scurrying away, trying to find something to defend himself with, essentially. Now, the thing that, like, really made it more polarizing is the fact that, you know, you have all of this going on, and then they try to, like, sprinkle in the subtext that is done via, like, this hand-drawn animation that I was having a hard time following. And then, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, some of the attacks are brutal, but then, like, it's backdropped into this, like, music box-type music that, like, a child would have from, like, a music box. And it didn't really, like, suit the movie. But, like, I found myself quite a bit in this one, kind of, like, dozing off, even though, like, it was, like, mid... Like, this one I kind of, like, watched in the middle of things. Now, I will say I did watch another movie that had time travel as an element, but I watched this one first. And my takes on the two movies are night and day differential. But, like, I genuinely do not have a problem watching a movie, regardless of how slow it is. You know, I do watch a ton of Asian horror, which does tend to be more of a slow burn, so, like, that's never an issue. But if I'm not enough in a movie, it's obviously not holding my attention. So
yeah.
I definitely deducted points based off of that alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know, like, other festival reviews and scores have been
high for this movie?
I don't know. Let me double check really quick before I say anything. I don't remember if this one was higher or lower. Let me just check this really quick. Assuming it loads. Hello? Rotten Tomatoes? Okay. I found it. So looking at Rotten Tomatoes right now, and this is still early on, this is based off of 28 critic reviews, it's at 82%. Which is still relatively high. But I didn't find there to be a lot of, like, gross-out moments or anything like that. You know, the chills at times were uneasy, but it was more of, like, a slow torture. And I don't mind the whole, like, reset, like, aspect when it comes to, like, movies like this or, like, Happy Death Day. But it definitely needed to pick up the pace in that sense, because it was just too slow for my liking. I honestly had this as the lowest score out of anything that I watched from CFF, and I would give it 1.5 stars, just because I could not stay committed to it. At all.
Okay. I was gonna watch that one next. I don't know now. I mean, after, you know, our recording and our episode, recording our episode and everything, I think I was gonna do that one next. No, it was Skull. It was Skull, and then that one. I don't know if I'll go to it now. You only gave it 1.5. That's not good.
Yeah.
Well,
I did not care for that one, but the next one that we're gonna talk about.
was actually the first one that I watched when I started watching the movies at CFF and everything. It's called Eat Brains Love, which is a zombie comedy. It is directed by Rodman Flender. It's a U.S. Based movie. It was done in 2019. And the plot goes, an ordinary lunch hour explodes into an orgy of spurting blood and flying organs when stoner Jake Stevens and a cheerleader, Amanda Blake, who he has been in love with for 4 years, the whole time they've been in high school, suddenly gut munch half of their class in the school cafeteria. Why did they do this, you ask? They are afflicted with a zombie virus. They're only afflicted by this virus. You can only be afflicted by this virus, and it can only be transmitted through sex. So someone gave it to Amanda, and Jake got it from someone. They hit the road in search for a cure while outrunning Cass, which is a telepath charged with hunting and killing the infected. Cass is a girl who actually she's charged with hunting and killing the infected, but she takes a liking to Jake because she doesn't see Jake as she sees the other infected. He lets her go when, you know, he actually tries to help her and everything. And it's mainly, can Jake and Amanda find love while eating their way through the National Sex Offender Registry when they are driving, which was very funny, by the way. While they're driving to get to where they think there might be a cure. Well, actually, they go to Amanda's brother first, who is this conspiracy theorist guy who likes to be off the grid, who's just like, nope, government. I'm not all about government at all. Sorry, nope, that's how they get you. And so they go to find him, and then from there, they think they could find a cure. So they're on like a little road trip to Bedell. The director of Idle Hands did this. He delivers an outrageous gore-soaked rom-com. So yeah, so it was really good. I really like this one. It was really funny. It was really well put together. It didn't start out slow at all. It starts out very fast and gets you right into it. Totem, can you give them anything that you liked?
Well, I gotta say, like, when a movie opens up with someone performing oral sex... So you got the stoner who's going down on the lead cheerleader here, literally to eat her out. Little does she know, like, yeah, he's not only going to town, but he's also going to rip her to shreds in this case. But like, that is an attention grabber right out of the gate. I will tell you that. So it does fall in similar vein to things like It Follows and Contracted, which both are also in this genre of like zombie infection spread through sexual confrontations and all of this, where like if you have sex with a carrier, then you have the infection, yada, yada, yada. You know, what's interesting about this is there is a little bit of a twist when it comes to the infection, where they do have the ability to maintain some sense of control. Now, granted, it is to a degree, but those worst cases of the infection come in moments of, like, real hunger or if you're, like, stressed out or anything like that. Now, you know, what I dug about this is, like, this whole subplot in this movie that is, like... so, like, off the wall, because you have, like, this government top secret agency, which is the NCD, that is the Necrotic Control Division, who are basically using these psychics, or mutants, and their abilities in order to track down the zombies. Now, of course, it is the government, so they do have other plans, which I'm not going to spoil. But, you know, you have Jake and Amanda, who are on the run from the NCD... And, you know, Jake definitely has a connection with not only Amanda, but also, you know, the chick from, you know, this group of hunters, essentially.
NCD. Yes. And her name is Cass, yes.
And, well, I mean, he likes to refer to her as Ripley because she's like a cuter version of Ripley from Aliens.
Which was funny, yeah.
Which they do constantly. But anyway, so like they're on the run from the NCD until they are saved by a lesbian zombie couple, Summer and Grace, who, you know, as you mentioned, kind of like have their own way of dealing with, you know, the hunger. So,
yes.
They like to, you know, snack on rats and, you know, should their hunger be a little bit more than usual, you know, they do tend to go after, like, pedophiles, sexual predators, things of that nature. So there's one sequence in particular, which is the one that I told you about initially, and I was like, oh, man,
yes.
I had a hard time watching this scene. So they basically have this sexual predator on the table. You know, he's naked. He's basically, like, set up as, like, a sushi girl, essentially. You know, you got, like, a little bit of, like, leaves and stuff under, like, on top of the guy's junk. And, you know, they're all sitting down at the table together, ready to dive in. And, you know, one of the lesbians is, you know, really wanting to just eat. And then her lover is like, you know, like, Grace, you know, we're not savages. Because, you know, she wants her to have some etiquette and, you know, put her napkin on her lap and all of that. And then what proceeds to happen is, you know, the one chick just goes to town, grabs the guy by the dick, rips it off. You see her peeling the skin off of it, right? And then she takes the testicle and throws it into the other girl's mouth like it's freaking popcorn. And I'm just like, what the hell am I watching? But, you know, it was at that moment, you know, I really enjoyed this movie, even leading up to this part. But I was like, this movie is not afraid to just be out there and be over the top. Like, it is
definitely
comedy first and horror second. But, like, I appreciated, like, all of these little things that they added. You have, like, this whole love triangle situation between Ripley, Jake, and Amanda. And, you know, just when Jake is about to get it in with Amanda, there's a connection that happens between Jake and Ripley. And needless to say, that puts a stop to what Jake and Amanda were doing.
At the time.
At the time, for sure. Yeah. But it's just like, this movie was a perfect, like, culmination of witty humor. I really dug the kind of, like, off-the-wall subplots dealing with the government.
Yeah.
And their whole ordeal, which I don't want to get into because I don't want to spoil it. But across the board, like, this is exactly what I want to see from horror comedy type movies. It has a little bit of everything. It has things that you just wouldn't expect. But at the same time, I was like, well, that guy had it coming. So I didn't really care at the time, but it doesn't make me watching it make me feel any better.
Yeah, that part was crazy. And when you said something about it a few days ago when you had watched it, I was just like, oh, okay, I'm watching that one first. And I didn't cringe or turn away, maybe possibly because I'm not a male of the male species. And when I saw it, I laughed. I was just like, oh my gosh, it's hilarious. And also, I've never seen that before. So awesome. So yeah, so the whole movie was great. I loved it. Every inch of it, yes. And that is how, like you said, that is how I like my zombie comedies to be.
Yeah, so this one for me across the board was the standout from CFF.
Yes.
And with that being said, I did give it a perfect score. I gave it 4 stars. And this is definitely one I am recommended to people. Go check this one out. It is well worth it. The subplots might be a little, like, polarizing for people, but the payoff is definitely there, and the ending in particular does leave things kind of open, so we could see a follow-up.
Of course, yeah. Yes, that would be, yeah, I would like that. That, it does leave it open for a follow-up, and that's pretty neat. I gave it a 3.5. Mainly because there were certain, just like a few things that I was just like, eh, okay. But for the most part, it was the standout for me. It was funny. It was pretty much everything. I think just to be a little bit more polished, then I would have been like, awesome. Because there were a few times with the group that Cass was with, and so that, mm-hmm. that, and everything like that, and them hunting and everything like that. For me, I was just like, okay, they didn't need to do that, maybe. But either way, I still loved it.
Right on. And on that note, I do want to say there were two other movies that I want to talk about really quick, both of which I know you haven't seen. One of them, I know you're going to check out tonight before everything closes up. Another standout for me was a drama. I want to say it would be a drama movie called The Wave. This was directed by Gil Clobin. This is a U.S. release from 2019. And it stars Justin Long as an insurance lawyer who is basically, you know, going out on the town to celebrate an upcoming promotion that he has. And, you know, his coworker Jeff is like really wanting him to go out and just, you know, live a little bit. Needless to say, their night takes a bizarre turn when Frank, played by Justin Long, decides to take a drug. And it completely alters his perception of the world and everything around him. And, you know, I got a good laugh out of this one, primarily because you have Jeff, his coworker, who is, like, telling mm-hmm. him to, like, live a little. So, Frank's idea of living a little is going out on a Tuesday night. That does not constitute as living a little, okay? Like, I don't know who he's talking to. That's not it. But basically, no, the big thing about this movie is you have Jake, you got, like, this guy's big day. For Frank. And he goes on this bender, and it involves a new drug, and it triggers whenever your tongue meets another person's tongue. Because you take it, you kiss someone, and then, you know, you both have, like, this LSD trip, essentially. And then what ensues is basically this really wacky time travel turn of events where Frank's life is basically turned upside down. You have the world, which is constantly trying to tell him something. It's, like, telling him to listen. But, like, he doesn't really know what it's trying to tell him or, like, what's happening or anything like that. And he's just trying to come to his senses in regards to, like, what is happening to him, trying to figure out what had happened during that bender. You know, he starts to see things that aren't there. He's basically tripping balls several hours on end after taking this drug. The girl that he met at the bar and ends up kissing with this drug when they're at, like, a house party seemingly is nowhere to be found. She's missing, and Frank's just trying to put the pieces together. His coworker doesn't know what the hell happened because, obviously, he walked away with this chick at the house party. And then that was all he saw of Frank. So it just revolves around these constant shifts between realities, essentially, where Frank is, like, giving his big presentation for his promotion. It revolves a lot with, like, clocks, and anytime, like, there's a loud noise or something, it kind of, like, resets the day. But, like, he runs into, like, this other drug dealer, unbeknownst to him, ends up stealing the guy's stash, and then there's, like, this elaborate, like, chase sequence that happens. And then, you know, there's moments where, like, he actually, is sort of, like, laying down with this girl that he met at this party. And, you know, and they're looking up at the stars, and, you know, they're having a little bit of a conversation back and forth. And he looks up, and, you know, the stars definitely do not look like how they're supposed to at all. But, you know, this was just a movie that essentially at its core is like an LSD-laced Groundhog's Day. You know, it really kind of showcased Frank's, like, perception of life as, like, an insurance lawyer. And, like, the girls, like, trying to show him to see things in a different perspective, and being on this drug kind of does that. And, like, he gives someone, like, this really big break that he otherwise wouldn't have because he wouldn't, you know, shy away from really screwing someone over as a lawyer, go figure. But this one is another one of standouts for me. It's really hard to kind of explain. This is something that you just have to kind of experience, just like you would with this hallucinogen, essentially. But I also gave this one 4 stars, so this was my other standout from this movie. Oh,
good. I'm glad, because I was actually, right before I started Scare Package, I looked at The Wave, and I was just like, you know what? I'll probably watch that before everything closes down. I want to check it out and everything like that. So if you're giving it rave reviews, I'm most definitely going to check it out before everything closes down, hopefully.
Yeah, so the last movie that I want to talk about really quick, which I know you're going to watch after this, is Skull.
Yes.
This was a world premiere for CFF. This is a Brazilian slasher flick from this year, directed by Capel Furman. And basically, this follows this ancient mask that possesses humans, and then they just go on this visceral sacrifice, killing spree for vengeance to try to reincarnate its god, essentially.
Huh.
So
nice.
This is a movie going in that was touted by the festival as the ultimate midnight movie. So it was touted for its gore, its bloodshed. So if you're looking for something for all of you gore hounds out there, someone looking to have a little bit of carnage candy, in that regard, this movie does deliver in spades. That being said, I will say it did lose quite a bit of traction when it comes to diving into more of the backstory or the folklore in itself. There's kind of this struggle that happens in this movie between attempting to conquer or control the demon that's in play as it's going on this mindless killing spree. And with each kill, we basically cut to a shot of this artifact filling up with blood. It's hinted that whenever it's completely full, then we see this god basically bringing all hell to earth. But this movie in particular kind of reminded me a little bit of a Splatterhouse type movie. Think Tokyo Gore Police in spots, but it's not over the top to the same extent. But there is a lot of blood involved. So if you're looking for something that has a lot of good blood for a slasher, it's definitely worth watching. But there's this really weird, I'm trying to remember how Jess described it earlier. I think she called the opening kind of Indiana Jones-esque, if I'm not mistaken. There's this backstory where there's this guy and he's uncovering this artifact and Nazis are involved for some reason. I honestly that opening sequence was kind of a blur. But someone ends up putting on the mask, and then of course, they want to have it out on display for a museum. But needless to say, that doesn't actually happen. And there also happens to be more than one artifact out there that has similar powers. So there is a subplot in this movie where it follows this really shady businessman who's a criminal overlord, I guess is the best way to put it. He's a crime boss and he's into child trafficking, and he's just looking to sacrifice a bunch of kids to this mask, essentially, in order to bring forth the god, essentially. But there was one part that kind of lost me in this movie, where during this whole killing spree, we see the demon attack this priest, and the priest, he's in his cathedral, and he's next to the statue, and he pulls off the hand of Jesus from the statue, and it's a long sword, and what pursues is a machete versus long sword battle That feels really, it feels like out of place. Like, I feel like it should be in like verses or something like that. But like, it was just like one of those things where I'm like, what the F is going on? This does not make sense for this kind of movie. It's like, what, like the priest is like trying to kill a demon with the hand of God. Because I mean, literally the handle is God's hand in this case. But like, it was one of those things that I'm like, okay, you guys are losing me here.
Yeah.
but all in all, like, if I were to rate it, I pegged it at 2.5. Like, I really enjoyed the gore aspect. There is, like, a club sequence that I thought was pretty comical because it is kind of like a killing spree, kind of, like, reminiscent. Well, not to the same extent, but it did remind me of, like, the collection opening in the nightclub. Not quite the same amount of bloodshed in it, but, like, the whole time, like, he's locking eyes with the DJ, and she's completely oblivious to what's about to ensue at this point. But the gore was phenomenal, and it's really close, like, as close as we'll get to, like, a demonic Jason presence, nowadays, anyway.
Gotcha. Okay. I will watch it after.
All right. I know we are running long, so... Let's talk about Tuesday really quick.
Alrighty.
So Twisted Tuesday. That happens to be tomorrow. By the time you guys listen to this, it's probably already Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So for Tuesday, May 26th, we have another double feature. So Vash, why don't you let them know what is on tap this week?
This week for our Twisted Tuesday, we will be taking a look at two mockumentary standouts of the genre with Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, and Digging Up the Marrow. Those are going to be great. Come check us out. Join us on cast starting around 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for our double feature tomorrow. We are sorry that we are recording later this week, but it was just because of the Chattanooga Film Festival. And we wanted to make sure that we got in as much as we can to give to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we pushed it back a couple of days, primarily due to the festival. And, you know, a lot of that was just due to the fact that there was a lot of stuff that we wanted to check out. And I didn't want to, like, deep dive and rush everything and then not have anything to watch the remainder of the days for CFF.
Yeah.
So
you want to spread it out.
Yeah. So for anyone out there that, you know, virtually attended CFF, let us know what you thought, what your standouts were from the festival, whether it's segment specific or, you know, just as a whole.
Panel specific.
Yeah, like, that's another thing. Like, I honestly haven't checked out any of the panels as of
yet. Me either. So if there's any panel-specific stuff you want to let us know about to check out, then please let us know. And with that, also, be sure to head over to iTunes and write us a review. We're always looking for new ways to improve you guys, to improve the show so that we can make it a better listening experience for you. If you have any segment ideas or things you'd like to see added to the podcast, feel free to reach out to us. Our ears, our eyes, we're open to suggestions. Just let us know.
Absolutely. And if you guys want to contact our show, you can do so a number of different ways. You can email us at handlewithscarepod@gmail.com. You can also find our website at www.handlewithscarepod.com. We do have a Discord. I need to set up a discord.me link so I don't have to read the invite code, but the invite code is UXT3CUF. Or better yet, you could just go to our website and click on the Discord icon. That's way easier to do, I assure you of that. But you can reach us over on Twitter at @handlewithscare. As for myself, Terminally Drunk, I am on Twitter at @terminallydrunkctr. But Vash, how can our listeners contact you via social media?
You can contact me on Twitter at @VashDeliaB. And shout out. Just go ahead, tweet at me. Say hi. Say hi to Totem. Come join us for Twisted Tuesday. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. And next week, I will definitely be discussing the month's worth of entries for our Twisted Tuesday. And hopefully by then, we'll have all the June releases across the streaming platforms as well, because I know not all of them are up to date as of yet on that front.
No.
But, you know, by next week, it'll be June, and we should be good then.
Yeah.
All right, so with that being said, guys, I do want to thank you again for joining us for another episode of Handle with Scare, and we will see you guys back next week. Enjoy your week.